A name you know who's in the know. It's the Cindy Adams Show, 77 WABC.
Okay, now that we've had a station break, I am still Cindy Adams, and I am now about to speak to a longtime friend of mine. His name is Jeffrey Weil. He is the international travel expert who does PR for Earth's best countries, cities, hotels. We first met in 1999. I was on my way to Jerusalem, which he was then representing, and where time and dating began. I was to do a story on what the universe then feared, with year 2000 upon us, that it might be the loss of all global computers, with a new century dawning and all the rest of it. It seems ridiculous now, but it appeared to be a real threat to us all then. Jeffrey took me hand by hand, and we went through Israel. Jeffrey, how did you first get into worldwide PR?
Hi, Cindy. Thank you for having me on the show. How did I get into PR? I wanted to be in the travel business. I wanted to escape. I had quite a complicated childhood, and my parents were both travelers. They both came from families that traveled. And the way I saw my way was to move out and to get into the travel business. And I started work at Thomas Cook in the days when Thomas Cook was very grand.
Is he still around? Is it still around?
No. It went bust 2 years ago and stranded hundreds of thousands of people all around the world.
I remember Cook. It was the only famous travel agency we knew in those days.
Absolutely. People would sail in off Fifth Avenue and plunk down $35,000 on a cruise. That's $35,000 in 1973.
Yeah.
And sail out again because we were trusted. There were no deals. We were just a people that knew how to get you where you needed to go and would take care of you once you got there.
Okay. Before we go into 1,000 stories that I know you're going to tell me, what I'd like to know is, how is it now for us with the pandemic to travel internationally? You just got back from Turkey with a present for me, thank you. And
you're
welcome. Just got back from Morocco. What was it like to travel internationally and then come back into the United States?
Well, it's interesting because to get on a plane to a foreign country, you have to be tested for COVID. So in effect, it's safer to fly to Morocco than it is to fly to Sarasota. And to get back into the United States, you have to have a COVID test when you're in Morocco or Turkey or wherever you are, and you cannot get on the plane if you don't have a negative test. On my flight back from Morocco, I was given a form that was about 5 feet long that I had to complete,
yeah.
Where I'd stayed, who I'd been with, what hotel I'd been in, what seat number I'd sat in on the plane, where my PCR test was. And I have it all ready. I mean, it took me two hours to fill it out, which gave me something to do on the plane. And I get to Newark Airport, and I go up to the immigration officer, and he looks at my passport, and he looks bored, and I say, and I have my form for you. Oh, we don't take those at this airport.
What, you're kidding? You mean after all of that, they didn't even check you?
Couldn't care less. Nobody told me I had to quarantine. Nobody told me zip.
My friends are now going to Australia, and besides what it costs to go to Australia and the schlep to go to Australia,
yeah.
You know, it's 7,000 days to get there. You also, on top of the price for flying, you have to go into a quarantine for 14 days that you pay for.
Exactly.
My friend, it's $3,000 per person. And if you're traveling for four people, it's a life's work. I mean, how is that possible to do that?
Well, there are countries like Australia and Britain currently that are incredibly rigid. Other countries are not quite so rigid. Europe is closed down. Britain is closed down. But you can go to certain places if you are prepared to go into quarantine, like Australia. But Australia, you know, they will close down Western Australia if two people get COVID.
Who cares what they do in Western Australia? I mean, it's too far away. So what about traveling internationally? What do you have to do? And what's it like on the airplane? And how do you eat with a stupid mask? How does this work?
Well, on United Airlines, they tell you to sip and put your mask back. Sip, put your mask back. Sip, put your mask back. And if you're in a row of three people, they ask that not all three people sip and put their mask back at the same time. I fortunately travel in the front of the plane in business class, so you know you have your own little pod and you can, it doesn't really matter that you're not breathing on anybody. I started traveling in September of last year before I was vaccinated. Now I am vaccinated, and you have a certain sense of confidence because of that. But you do have to wear your mask the entire time on the plane, and except when you're eating.
But that's a long flight if you're taking an 8-10 hour flight.
Yeah.
Wear the mask the entire time.
Yeah.
What about rubber gloves and washing down the handsets?
They really clean the planes, and there always were these few people that would get on the plane and take out gloves
and wipes
and clean the entire plane and the windows and the armrests and the seatbelt. I never did that, and I haven't really done it much. Because they really do clean the planes. And I think we've all come to learn that you don't get COVID from touching an armrest. You get it from somebody splurting in your face. And that's really what the issue is.
Okay. So now I would like to ask you some of the wonderful stories. I am talking to Jeffrey Weil, an international travel expert who has handled some of the most fabulous places in the world. I have been to 22 countries with Jeffrey. Tell me about the Donatella Versace secret visit, if you can. And even if you can't, what do I care if you can't? Tell me.
I can tell you.
Tell me.
We used to represent what I think is still the most gorgeous hotel in the world, La Mamounia in Morocco.
We've been.
And I was going for the weekend with my wife, and we were told that Donatella Versace is coming, but nobody on earth, nobody in the galaxy may know about it. It was to be kept totally secret because she was arriving secretly, she was staying secretly. So I said, fine, good. So we get there, and the next morning we go down to the pool, and all of a sudden the entire front row of deck of pool lounge chairs have little reserved signs on it. Okay, so we don't sit in the front row. On the strike of 12, a cortege comes out of the hotel, thugs, bodyguards, children, Donatella Versace, more thugs, her hairdresser, her masseur, a few more thugs. And they all arrange themselves on all of these lounge chairs. And Ms. Versace removes the top of her bikini, and lies there
She's
for a while.
Naked?
Well, the bottom part is still covered. But the upper part is arrayed for all of us to see. But it's a big secret. We mustn't know she's there.
Yeah, right.
And then she takes a swim in the pool. Topless. Then she emerges from the pool and lies on one of the sunbeds. And then her masseurs gives her a full body massage everywhere with great pounds of oil.
And we're not supposed to know she's
but we
there.
No, it's a total secret. Nobody must know she's there.
Yeah.
And then the hairdresser brushed her hair 200 times. And then we got bored and went to lunch. But we must never mention that Donatella Versace.
Did she ever speak? Did she ever do anything? Did she look to anyone?
No, she played with the kids a little bit. She swam. No, there was not a great interaction with the gang with her.
Okay, but some of these stories are so wonderful. I remember, I mean, there are so many stories. Jeffrey and I, as I have said, have schlepped to 22 countries. How many continents?
All of them.
Oh, okay. And once, when we were in downtown Siberia, which is not where everybody goes for the weekend, we were in Kazakhstan. And you tell me, who is the person you know who's been to downtown Kazakhstan? And because, for whatever the reason, I was supposed to be a VIP or something.
In
Kazakhstan. That's a big deal, right? And they laid out somewhere a huge lunch in my honor.
We had to drive 3 hours to get to it, but
yeah,
yes.
Well, right in the main city, they didn't care about me. In the jungle is where I was famous. And would you like to explain what the lunch was or how it looked first?
Well, it was beautifully laid out, as you say, but it was an unprepossessing shade of gray. And we learned... And I can remember it like yesterday. It was a big oval platter of slices of clerical gray meat covered in clerical gray gravy.
And noodles.
Lots of noodles. They weren't gray. They were kind of creamish.
I remember the noodles, yeah.
They were more beige.
Yeah.
And we asked, out of politeness, you know, with this... What is this treat you're offering us? And they said it's one of Kazakhstan's biggest specialities, our wild desert horses. And you and I look at each other.
This was a gray horse. We were looking at the behind of a gray horse that was covered in noodles.
They didn't explain exactly which cut of the horse
it was behind.
Horse.
I mean, I was there and I saw it. It was a very large behind of the... So if I recall, we did not eat lunch.
Well, we kind of played with it. There were other salads and there were kind of vegetables and we cut it up and we played around with it. We didn't want to be impolite. But and I think I did take a taste and it really wasn't worse than eating dog.
Okay, so many of these stories. There is a story. Now, I don't know whether you're going to give us the name or not, but I remember that you once told me about a movie star who trashed her hotel suite every single time she was there. What was that story
about? Well,
this
takes us back to Morocco, to the Mamounia, and there it was... A famous German movie star whose father actually was an even more famous German movie star. The father's name, first name is Klaus. Her first name was Natasha. And Natasha would come with her husband to the Mamounia for a week every spring. They would arrive on a Saturday, they'd leave on a Saturday. And on a Friday night, for reasons that are not entirely clear to anybody except clearly her psychiatrist, she would go bonkers and she would rip the room apart. She would break the mirrors. She would break the lamps. She'd tear down the drapes. She'd slash the beds. She'd slash the couches. And in the morning, the husband would go down to the front desk abashed and explain that his wife had...
An incident in the
room, exactly.
Yes, yes.
And he took out 50,000 euros in cash, or $50,000, or whatever it was. And that was the end of it. They came back the next year, and they were given another suite. And Friday night, bingo, she does it again. He comes down on Saturday morning. He explains. He's embarrassed. He pays. They leave. They come back the third year. And by this time, the hotel general manager has an idea. Because the suite 407 really could use some help. And it is time for it to be redone. So that is the suite they occupy. So Friday night, boom, off she goes again. $50,000 the next morning. And they have the money to redo the suite that needed redoing anyway.
Okay, I know who the star is and I can't tell. I mean, I would love to tell. And if you ask me privately, I might tell you. But in the meantime, I don't quite understand for true. Was there something? I know who she is. She's a famous star. What is the matter with her?
I think she's bipolar. Seriously bipolar. And... the kind of acting that she did or does kind of reflects that kind of personality. But she clearly had an issue. Maybe she, you know, there are bipolar people that when they feel better, they don't take their medication. So she was on vacation in the sun and having a great time and probably forgot to take the medication and it sets it off.
We don't know if she did other things other than trash hotel suites.
No, no.
That was her thing.
That was, yeah.
Very strange, very strange. We have been to so many places together. Tell me about the San Juan Airport with the security clerk. I mean, the story is...
My wife and I were in Puerto Rico and we were coming home and we were at San Juan Airport and we were in the departure lounge. And in those days, they were doing security by using a radar wand that they would, you know, pass over your body and over your belt and over your
various
private parts.
Yes. OK.
And the... very nice security guy had this wand in his hand and it was buzzing and it was making a noise and he needed to repair it and he didn't know how the hell to repair it. So he asked the passengers all lined up, does anyone have a pocket knife? And
going on a plane?
Yeah. So my wife, who used to do embroidery, has her Swiss Army knife in her purse and she hands it to him. He uses the blade to open the radar machine. He mends it. He closes it up. He gives it back to her.
The security guard.
Yeah, the knife. He gives it back to her. And we all get on the plane and fly to New York.
What kind of a thing is that? How is this possible?
It was a little alarming because of...
so much for security.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, there is a lot about security that is quite alarming because you... we all know what you can take on a plane, but we also know that you can go into the duty-free shop and buy a bottle of vodka. And once you get it on the plane, you can go in the bathroom and smash it, and you have a fabulous weapon. So it's totally safe, and yet...
But you're schlepping all around the world.
Yeah.
You just come in from, as I've said, Turkey and Morocco.
Right.
Those are long trips. And you don't feel any fear about doing all of this?
No.
You Why
mean,
not?
You mean because of terrorism or COVID?
Who cares? What's the difference?
My biggest fear is that the wings are going to drop off, but I've kind of got over that. No, I don't fear it. I think that terrorism has really been extinguished for now, on planes anyway. I have been... vaccinated for COVID, so I'm not really concerned about that. No, I'm not frightened of it. No, and I love it. And, you know, when the 7 months when I couldn't travel, I was beginning to get the bends. I was beginning to go into crisis.
No, I know. Well, in case somebody has just tuned in, I'm speaking to Jeffrey Weil. If you look him up, you will find he is the number one travel expert in the world, I think. And he has handled only the best places. Tell me people, in case they don't know you, he has a travel agency in New York.
A PR firm.
PR firm. Tell me some of the places, I mean, the famous places that you... What's this, the train? We went
the,
on...
The Orient Express.
Yeah, the Orient Express. And what's the Amman Resorts?
Well, Amman Resorts, we represented for a long time. We now represent... the King David in Jerusalem and the Adlon in Berlin and the Hassler in Rome and a lot. Cruise ships on the Amazon, cruise ships on the Mekong.
You just had a famous person at some hotel that I heard about where they were in.
It was Chrissy Teigen and John Legend, her husband, and her mother and the kids, and they were at Suneva Jani in the Maldives. The Maldives is one of the few places on Earth that is COVID-free. And once
Who the hell wants to go there?
Believe it or not, yeah. Half the world wants to go there.
Where are the Maldives?
The Maldives are about 500 miles south of India, south of Sri Lanka.
Which is not a place we also want to go right now.
Which is not a place that we all want to go to right now.
Yeah.
You are quite right.
Yes.
But the Maldives is this little jewel of an archipelago of little islands that are in the middle of nowhere and where the beaches are beautiful and where everything is very well kept in terms of sustainability. And a lot of very famous people, many of whom I can't mention, go there a lot.
What's in the downtown Maldives?
Male is the capital of Maldives, and there is very little, and there is absolutely no point in actually bothering to go there. But were you to go there, you could go where I went with Alan Cumming, and where we had a Thai dinner in a Thai restaurant in this middle of nowhere that cost something like $400 a person for the same kind of meal you could have had on 49th Street for $27.95.
It was Jeffrey Weil who went with me when I went to see my friend, the Queen of Thailand. She was the one who gave me the Thai Air Force plane to take us to Phuket when there was the tsunami and we lost friends there. And the Queen of Thailand gave me the permission with a Thai Air Force person. And we went to Phuket, Jeffrey and I, to find our friends. Jeffrey, you and I have spent our lives schlepping around the world. Love you madly. And thank you very much for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for my birthday present.
You're very welcome.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.